I want to see the team have the kind of fight that they had in 2016, even if we shock the world. Shock the world!
Playing a Mexican team in the next round.
That's what I was about to say.
Powered it forward, Jack Price in goal.
And the Colorado Rapids, the team from the Rockies, have scaled their own mountain tonight. They are MLS Cup winners.
We'll give you the ball so that we can spring on you and then claw your face off and eat your flesh. Hello, Rapids fans, and welcome to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on the evening of Wednesday, January 30th, 2019. We've got plenty of news and notes to talk about as we enter in just a couple days before the month away from the Rapids kicking off their 2019 season. Co-host and friend, Rabbi Mark Goodman, are you keeping warm with the polar vortex in chilly Pittsburgh?
Yeah, did you guys not get vortex in Colorado?
We did not get vortex. It's just been extremely cold. And then we've gotten snow like at least once every 5 days for like the last 2 or 3 weeks. I've had multiple days where like I've worked from home and the driving to Summit County has been treacherous, but the powder has been absolutely fantastic. I was at Keystone for about 9 hours, on Saturday. But yeah, so we're getting a lot of snow. I don't know that it's vortex related.
Yeah, we got vortex and it's cold and windy and, we were supposed to have school today. The kids were going to have school. The public schools were canceled because they didn't want, there's a lot of kids who ride the bus in Pittsburgh. I don't understand this city and someone will eventually explain it to me, but like, it seems like in Pittsburgh, like if you live like 10 blocks from your school, then a bus is going to take you. Like you don't have to walk. They don't expect you to take the local public school bus and, you know, pay or anything. And also like it seems like a ton of kids live near a school but take a bus to a different school. So there's more like per capita school buses in Pittsburgh than I've ever seen in my entire life. So they don't want the kids to wait out by the bus for like a second. So they just canceled school yesterday. My school was going to happen because we don't have that many kids on the bus and it's a private Jewish school. And then at the last minute, they canceled school this morning because, the snow, there was like 2 inches of snow that fell that they weren't expecting and they can't clear it because salt won't melt snow if the temperature outside is like zero. And also, a lot of things, it had snowed and then it had frozen. So like everything was slippery. The roads were all slippery. It was like, you know, it was just too dangerous. So they canceled school. My kids are sitting around all day and I made, Japanese short rib stew. So that was it's going to be for tomorrow night. But that was the big thing. It's like, you know, when you have really cold weather, you need meat. Like you need like something that's going to warm you up. Like a stew is really good. And I found this really awesome recipe for stew. And my wife reminded me, you know, you do this. You get an idea around meat. And then my wife is like a mild vegetarian. Like she only eats meat once in a while. And she goes, you know, instead of making this and then having nobody else in the family eat it, why don't you invite some other people over and they'll come over tomorrow night? So we invited friends over. They're coming over tomorrow night.
Excellent stuff, Mark. So I actually have a banter item that I've been meaning to talk about. So I was at the British Bulldog on Stout Street on Sunday. I am in the process of completing my collection for, I would call it regular Premier League teams. So unfortunately, you know, like Fulham's probably getting relegated. Huddersfield probably isn't staying up this year, but a team, you know, that has been in the Premier League more often than not, over the course of the past 10 years. I do not yet have a crystal. I did not yet have a Crystal Palace scarf. So our good comrade in arms, Richard Terry, invited me to watch the FA Cup match between, Palace and Tottenham, if I'm not mistaken, a 2-0 win for the Eagles. And he gave me a Crystal Palace scarf that he got from Selhurst Park that I think has a lot more value than a general one from soccer.com that's just going to be the generic one that's, you know, probably made in Indonesia and then shipped all around the world.
Did you have a Premiership team before? Fulham, but they're kind of bad this year, right?
Yes. Like,
So are you kind of pulling now for Fulham and Crystal Palace, or are you still a Fulham fan? And then when they go back down at the end of this year, you'll jump on the Crystal Palace team.
I mean, I don't have anything against Palace. I think I relate to them a lot in the sense that, in terms of Palace to Fulham, they're both very, very similar clubs and sort of
right.
being that middle tier neighborhood club in London, don't have a whole lot of glory. You know, Palace had that one, I want to say it was 4 or 5 years ago, where they made the FA Cup final, but then ended up losing to Manchester United. So they don't have, you know, they've got a lot of history. They've got a real family atmosphere to them, but then not a whole lot of actual glory. So I'm endeared to them in that sense, in the sense that, you know, they're all I could just use that description to talk about the Colorado Rapids, for example, and
right.
you would have said the same thing. So, you know,
right.
I guess
the challenge of picking a mid-tier or lower tier or a championship club is, if you're already a Rapids fan, that's like doubling up your suffering. Why pick a bad club when you could pick a really good club? I wound up for a couple years ago, for fairly dumb reasons that most Americans, other Americans who are Arsenal fans have, I wound up an Arsenal fan. And so the one benefit, the sucky part about being an Arsenal fan is they finish fourth, fifth, or sixth every year. But the great thing about being an Arsenal fan is they finish better than the Rapids do every year. So they're always, you know, and, you know, like, they can complain that they're, you know, $100 million midfielder is underperforming, like, as opposed to the Colorado Rapids, who, you know,
had
would,
Nick LaBraca for 5 years.
who would get down on bended knee and pray to their ever living God each and every night if they could have a $10 million player, let alone a $100 million player.
So in any case, I'm at the game. I get the Crystal Palace scarf. Palace manages to not completely blow the lead in there, Mark. And I was in, I don't have any other Crystal Palace paraphernalia, but I wanted to fit in since Richard Terry was giving me the scarf. So I was rooting for the Eagles in this game. No disrespect to Tottenham in any way, shape, or form. And so, from my away days Christmas present that one of my parents got me, I got an FC Basel jacket. That I'm sure, you know, Skelshengashi would be very proud of, that are conveniently similar to the red and blue of Palace. And so I got that and I realized I'm wearing RSL colors at a soccer bar in Denver. And so I got into a conversation with Richard about this and kind of wondering, you know, how does a sports fan who has multiple fandoms across different sports rationalize the potential meshing of colors and some of their colors working for one of their teams, but also then being the enemy color for another team? When I was at the University of Miami as a freshman, I got into a huge discussion with like 4 or 5 other people talking about, does wearing an orange cane shirt with blue jeans count as wearing the University of Florida colors? We played Florida my freshman year in football, so how do you make sense of that? So, you know, Pittsburgh, it may not be that relevant, Mark, because every team wears black and gold. But, you know, generally speaking, there are a lot of Denver teams that have an enemy that wears red. You know, I look at the Kansas City Chiefs that have red compared to the Denver Broncos, you know, the Rapids and RSL. And then if we're including college, you know, the CU Buffs and the University of Nebraska, for example. But say you have a Colorado native who goes to a college that naturally wears red. You know, how do you make sense of that, or how do you make sense of wearing the paraphernalia of your team that might accidentally be the color of one of your other team's enemies?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question. I personally do not subscribe to deep-seated passions around colors, right? It doesn't keep me up at night that it doesn't feel to me like I need to root for Burnley in the Premier League because they also wear a burgundy color, you know? And I don't get upset at a red, blue, white mix like RSL. Like, you know, Palace has cool colors. It doesn't even, until you mentioned it, didn't even occur to me they have the same colors as RSL.
Okay, that's fair. I guess I wouldn't say obsessed about it, but I'm very conscious about it just because being a redhead, there's so many colors that just naturally clash with me. You know, like me wearing, you know, the Rapids away kit, you know, that's bright yellow with my hair just absolutely doesn't match so ever. So, you know, the darker, you know, anything red, orangey, or burgundy definitely works. But, you know, like me in bright yellow, me in bright pink, that's a no-go.
I was a blonde until, you know, my recent hair follicle challenges of the last 5 or 10 years. So I was always kind of the assumption that blondes shouldn't wear yellow. So I never, ever wore yellow. And now I live in Pittsburgh. Every single team in Pittsburgh is yellow, black and yellow. Of course, they believe that it's gold, but they are incorrect. It is yellow. And I can prove it because Wiz Khalifa wrote a song called Black and Yellow. And Wiz Khalifa is not only from Pittsburgh, he's from Squirrel Hill. And not only is he from Squirrel Hill, he went to the high school that's literally 3 blocks from our house right here. So Wiz Khalifa, mad props, big ups.
All right, let's get into it. Let's get into it, Mark.
Hello.
Yeah. I feel obligated that we have to talk about it just because it happened since the last time we potted. The Greg Berhalter era has officially begun for the United States men's national team. It began with a 3-0 convincing win over Panama, albeit a Panama B team, but, you know, some new tactical ideas, some new players, Christian Ramirez, who I've been hyping up throughout the past 18 months or so to get an opportunity with the U.S. men's national team, comes off the bench and scores a goal. No Kellen Acosta in this one, as we talked about last week. He's now back in training in South Florida with the Colorado Rapids. Mark, does this friendly matter? Do we care? Are we just happy that there's someone besides Bruce Arena and Jurgen Klinsmann coaching on the sidelines for a U.S. national team game?
We are excited about that, one. Two, I did not watch the game because I am on, I wouldn't call it an open protest, but I just don't see the point in watching USMNT games before the before they get to qualifying. And also the news this week that some website called, what is it, Flow HC is going to be hosting.
Flow Sports, yeah.
Flow Sports is going to be hosting all the CONCACAF Nations League matches. This is a website I've never heard of. BN was terrible, and it was difficult to watch the games on it, and the quality was bad, and they did stupid stuff like box in box in box of other games so that you couldn't watch a game. It was a disaster, and they've actually made it worse. And I have a bad feeling that because it's a CONCACAF deal, the CONCACAF Champions League is also going to be on this Flow Sports website, you know, and they're not going to be on Roku. They're not going to be on cable. That's not good for the league. So anyways, point being, like, I'm going to kind of ignore the USMNT, but that doesn't mean that I don't care. The second thing is, yes, we're excited about Greg Berhalter starting off. And third of all, it is an interesting question to ask whether almost any of the players that were on the field in that Panama game will be on the field in 2 years in a meaningful game. I mean, there were just a lot of players there who are fringy maybe kind of guys who they're kind of kicking the tires on. I mean, Jordi Mihailović is probably the most exciting of all of them, but there were a bunch of guys there who I'm like, who's that? What is he doing here? So I don't know. Were there some players on the field where you were like, oh yeah, I see what the hype is about it. He's exciting. I should keep a tab on him.
I mean, I guess I feel like there were a bunch of guys who over the course of the last year or two had earned an opportunity with the U.S. national team in January camp, regardless of the coaching change and Berhalter taking over. But there were a couple who I was, you know, a little bit impressed with. You know, the player that Walker Zimmerman has become since leaving FC Dallas and post Laurent Simon leaving the club. He's now back with Toronto. You know, I've been really impressed to see what he's done. He already got a new deal. You know, Aaron Long, I think, has been on a fantastic calendar year stretch of him going from Champions League last year now into almost February, you know, in the present. So, you know, there's a bunch of guys who I'm impressed with, but at the same time, like, is there any doubt that if Greg Berhalter had to win a game tomorrow in a cup tournament, in a World Cup qualifier, anything, that, like, Wes McKennie, Christian Pulisic, Tyler right. Adams, who balled out in his RB Leipzig debut, aren't going to be involved in this team? So I felt like, you know, the January camp as a whole was a good taking stock of, you know, the hottest names from 2018 of Americans to be playing in MLS. But as I said about Kellen Acosta, that I think is going to be true for every single player who is in the squad on Sunday night, is, you know, that friendly was, okay, you had a nice moment. If you had a nice moment, okay, you've got some stuff to work on if you didn't have a good moment. But ultimately, if you want a chance to get called up for the friendlies in April, if you want to make the preliminary roster for the Gold Cup that's, you know, just 3-4 months away, that deadline now, like, the best thing for you to do is go back to your MLS club, be a starter, and absolutely ball out. So, I mean, you know, if Walker Zimmerman does absolutely nothing for LAFC and they have a really struggling start to the season, there's nothing that he did in the month of January that's ultimately going to matter. He's not going to get called in. So Walker Zimmerman, he's got to ball out. Kellen Acosta, who wasn't on the roster, he's going to have to ball out. Nick Lima, who is in kind of a weird situation. You know, San Jose Earthquakes are in a different situation now with Matias Almeida taking over. You know, Lima, can you earn a spot as a starting right back? And can 2 months into the season, can the San Jose Earthquakes be in a playoff spot and you be playing well? And I think all of that, you know, that body of work that is to come in the next couple of months are going to matter way more than what you did in front of 6,000 people in an empty stadium on the night of the Royal Rumble against a Panama team that you knew was going to go in there and bunker no matter what.
Yep. Well said.
All right, Mark, let's move on. Speaking of Kellen Acosta, we've got a whole bunch of rumbling news about him. As I mentioned, he is back in training with Anthony Hudson et al. And there were rumors out of MLSsoccer.com this week that the Rapids turned down an offer for Kellen Acosta, reportedly around $3 million USD from a championship team. I've got a few ideas, being a championship guy, who that club could be. But Mark, your thoughts on this, and you might be better suited than I to explain this to the listeners, why the Rapids didn't look at that and say, oh, $3 million, we turned down $3 million, as opposed to turning down less than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very kind that you think I'm better at math than you are, but I think you probably know this very well. The deal doesn't make any sense for the Colorado Rapids. The way the transfer deals always work in Major League Soccer is that, depending on service time with a club and whether they came up with the academy or not, the league gets a cut of the money. And that's so that it could be evenly distributed to other teams, and also because the general sense of single entity means that it's the league who owns the rights to players, not the teams themselves. The teams are kind of franchises who, you know, deliver the product that the league created, much like a McDonald's in Pacoima and a McDonald's in Kalamazoo will both dish out the exact same Big Mac. Not a perfect analogy, but pretty good. But that also means that I believe that the league is going to take about a 50% cut of Kellen Acosta. For academy players, it's lower. And for players who've been with the team for like 2 or 3 years, it's lower. But because Acosta's only been with the Rapids for less than a year, the league takes a big bite of that transfer. So $1.5 million would immediately go to MLS, leaving the Rapids with $1.5 million. But wait, not so fast, dude. The Rapids cut their deal with FC Dallas in that they have a sell-on clause for, I believe right now it's 50%, and it either goes down later or it doesn't. I don't remember what, but it's very, you know, that deal basically means that if you get a $3 million transfer for Kellen Acosta, the Rapids only pocket $750,000. I mean, think of what $750,000 buys for the Rapids. That's not quite.
That's a Joe Mason.
That's not quite Yannick Bolli, and that's just a little bit more than Tommy Smith, and a little bit more than Sam Nicholson. So it's not Kellen Acosta. Unless you can get a better player, or unless you know that Acosta wants out, like for instance today it was announced that, and it just became official about an hour ago, that Sebastian Giovinco has been sold to Al Hilal in the Saudi Arabian League for $3 million. Like, you didn't get that much money for him. Toronto would probably only keep $2 million of that. But, you know, also Sebastian Giovinco had said, I don't want to play here anymore. The last thing I'll say on this is, and listeners may know this if you're really in the know, about soccer, but you may not know this, that a player gets a cut according to FIFA rules of a transfer deal. Which means, unfortunately, and this is a difficulty of the modern soccering world, that players and agents sometimes push for transfers because it's a payday for them. And that's not good really for soccer or for the league, but it's a reality. The last time the Rapids had to deal with that was a number of years ago when they sold Shane O'Neill. And Shane O'Neill was widely rumored that Shane O'Neill's family was pressured by their agent to make that move because O'Neill's agent said, hey, you can get paid right now. So think of it from O'Neill's perspective. He's making basically the league minimum as a Rapids Academy guy. He's making $60,000 a year. His agent comes and says, hey, I can get you a transfer to a team in Europe for $500,000, which will mean a one-time payday of about 10% for you. You'll make $50K in one swing, or you can grind another year in Colorado for $60K. What makes more sense? It doesn't, you know, in the end of the day, O'Neill did not have a very successful trip to Europe. But the agent showed there that they can, you know, that the money makes that deal want to happen. Thankfully, Acosta wants to stick around for another year, maybe raise his value, then move to Europe.
Agree with you on that front, Mark. Just to clarify, per the press release from both clubs, it is a 50% sell-on clause through the end of the secondary 2020 transfer window. So that would be, you know, a year and 6 months from now. The primary transfer window is the one that happens in winter that ends usually in the first weeks of April or May. And then the secondary transfer window would be that July to usually mid-August, maybe, you know, early September at the absolute latest. I have heard, Mark, but haven't been able to get this absolutely confirmed by, you know, someone truly in the know, that there is also a stipulation that was not included in that press release, that is, it goes down to a 25% sell-on clause through the end of the 2021 transfer window. So the Rapids get a lot more money if they end up selling Acosta after 2021, and if Acosta really wants to go balls to the wall to try and get a big move and get in playing time with a club in Europe prior to the Qatar World Cup, the Rapids would keep the entirety of the share that the league doesn't give them, presumably as of January 1, 2022. I've got a few hypotheses as to which clubs they could potentially be, Mark, and the short answer is these aren't necessarily clubs that you want to be in if you're set on going to the championship. So based on my understanding of the championship as someone who peruses them on a week-to-week basis, in ESPN Plus, these are teams that potentially would have the money to spend, need some help in terms of ball movement in the midfield, and in particular have natural affinities for American players to where maybe they would see more or be more familiar with Kellen Acosta than, you know, a club that would have the stereotype of, oh, Americans don't actually know how to play soccer unless they're goalkeepers. So just the ones that I have rattled off right here in my brain, Mark, are Nottingham Forest. Eric Lehigh plays for them, left back, if I'm not mistaken. They could use a little bit of help in the midfield. Birmingham City are just outside of the relegation battle right now, but they're not really scoring a whole lot of goals. Stoke basically has a bunch of number sixes and then like one number 10. You know, they formerly had Jeff Cameron before he went to QPR, question mark. They could use some more, you know, creativity, and, you know, at the very least, Kellen Acosta isn't a guy who's going to go there, hack somebody, and then get a yellow card. And then a team that's just absolutely desperate for any opportunities right now, really struggling in a relegation battle, Millwall. Millwall doesn't have a whole lot of money. Their record transfer fee actually came last year when they spent £1.2 million. I think that's, what, 1.8, 1.9, depending on, you know, where the pound is this week, given Brexit and everything. So all four of those teams that I listed, I don't have that confirmed, but in terms of like that on their end, but just looking for, you know, what would be a team that would see value in Kellen Acosta and would need somebody in that role right now. And with the exception of Birmingham, who are roughly mid-table, like the rest of them are all pretty much bottom half of the table. At least two or three of those would be fighting a relegation battle. I hesitate to put Bolton Wanderers in there just because of the Stuart Holden connection, but they're firmly in a relegation battle right now and probably going down. And poor Tommy Smith's Ipswich Town currently only have 18 points on 29 games played. So based on my guesses, guys, of which teams would have been interested in Kellen Acosta, some of them would be nice landing spots in terms of he'd immediately get an opportunity to start. I don't know if they would be a club that would really raise his profile either with the U.S. men's national team or potentially moving that on to a Ligue 1, getting in as a reserve player player for an English Premier League side team, and you know, none of the teams, you know, whether it's Leeds United or West Brom or anything, none of the teams at the top have a distinct hole that Kellen Acosta would walk in. So, you know, if he gets sold to Sheffield United tomorrow, Kellen Acosta's probably not seeing the field, you know, until the end of the season when Sheffield's promotion battle has already been decided one way or the other.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting perspective. I think the most important thing you said in that entire sentence, although you raised the possibility of a lot of teams that would want him and should want him and should overpay for him, is the question for him of, will this raise my profile? And for me, it feels, I could be wrong, but it feels like for an American to move to the championship is a lateral move. Not necessarily because I believe the championship is equal to MLS in terms of quality, but just in terms of exposure. It just doesn't get the same level of respect in national and in world soccer. You know, if a better move for him would be a move even to a mid-table club in France or a lower table club in Germany, where the league is considered big, where the quality is considered good. Spain doesn't seem to be a landing spot for any Americans anymore, and I'm not sure why.
Rest
and
Italy, Shaq Moore's career.
Right. Yeah. And Italy's basically the same. So, you know, that's where that comes down for me.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, Mark. I guess the only other thing I'd say is if it would be like, if you're joining a championship team, you know, let's look at like Leeds United, who's top of the division at time of recording. You know, if you're joining a championship team as a, we're confident we're getting promoted, we're going to start spending money knowing that Premier League money is coming, we're going to sign you on now in the hopes that you're part of the team that's ultimately going to get us stable in the Premier League so that we don't end up being a yo-yo club. And I don't know that any of those teams would be interested in Kellen Acosta from a positional standpoint, or would be willing to pay that money for him rather than just holding on to their money. And, you know, similar to what, you know, the Huddersfields and the Burnleys and the Fulhams of yesteryear have done, just going absolutely insane in August and September to really bolster their squad to try and not immediately get relegated. You know, there's no gaping hole for a number eight right now for Norwich or for Leeds United. And even if those clubs were interested in Kellen Acosta, you know, does sitting on the bench and playing in FA Cup or Caribou Cup matches and then occasionally coming off the bench in the Premier League is, I would say that that's almost as much as a lateral move as walking into the starting 11 at a lower mid-table, like 13th, 14th placed championship club. Let's move on to some of the other news in the spirit of other rumors that are also dead by the time that we ultimately recorded. I'll start with some news on a lighter note for Rapids fans. Mark Birch, who was out of contract with Minnesota United, his option was not picked up, has found a landing spot. He is now, I guess, is Tim Howard technically partially his boss now? Mark Birch has officially signed with Memphis 901 FC, USL championship expansion side. I think I saw in the press release that he's intended to be their captain as well. Mark, you know, you and I both have very fond memories of Mark Birch, the player and the person. Your thoughts on him getting a job and maybe eating a little bit more Memphis barbecue this year?
That dude can hit a ball. I mean, he just... I've never seen a guy hit a ball as hard as him in 2015. Maybe it was 2014. He took a free kick from the left side from like 40 yards out. And I literally have never seen a ball hit that hard in my entire life. It was a sight to behold. So that's one thing about him. And also, you know, he had a bad year with the Rapids in 2015, but in 2016, he was spectacular. He's not the fastest guy on the field. He has at least average speed. So if he can keep that speed or something resembling that speed for this year, he's defensively as sound as they come. So I think that's a good move. That being said, I was very excited that Kosuke Kimura was the left back for, Nashville last year, and he actually wasn't that good and split time with two other left backs. Gary Smith just couldn't quit him, but, you know, aging left backs are a real,
risk, you know. And if you've got a good one, but they, you know, they turn sour really fast and all of a sudden, you know, just a little bit of lost pace or a little bit of lost reaction time, and you're giving up goals left, right, and center to the best player on the opposing team usually. So, I hope it's good for Birch. I hope he comes in healthy and fit and at the top of his game after kind of spending a year, picking up some rust, and a few injuries, with Minnesota.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, from a locker room standpoint, I think he's going to be a fantastic, calming veteran presence for Memphis 901. You know, I think there's a lot of these guys who are kind of fringe MLS players to where if they still want to be a starter and still want an opportunity, like, there's plenty of chances for them, you know, depending on where they want to live and are they willing to take a probably significant pay cut from their MLS budget salaries in the USL, especially with all the expansion teams coming in. Like, I have no doubt if no MLS team was willing to kick the tires on Alan Gordon that he wouldn't be, you know, the captain and the absolute face of a franchise for some USL team, and he would be dragging a whole bunch of teenagers and recent college graduates just kicking and screaming into relevancy as a US expansion team. So I think Mark Birch is absolutely going to fill that hole for the club. I question, you know, how much gas he has left in the tank, and he has definitely lost a spot. But at the very least, he'll be a good locker room guy. He'll be a good representative, for the club. And, you know, I am, you know, this is one more tick on the reasons I'm going to be watching USL on ESPN Plus when there's no MLS game of interest on, especially if Memphis 901 are playing. Speaking of aging left backs who potentially no longer have a place in MLS, Mark, the Rapids had some rumors and then they're now pretty much dead with two main defenders. One, Minor Figueroa, who was playing somewhere in Liga MX. I can't remember offhand what club. Most recently, was an Oscar Pereja guy, with FC Dallas. He was reportedly in discussions with a contract offer in MLS. And supposedly that club was potentially Colorado Rapids. Excuse me. Given the situation they have at left back and maybe needing a cheap veteran option, that quickly got shot down after that rumor started. And then, Kofi Opare confirmed on Twitter, that he has been invited to training with the Colorado Rapids, but hasn't signed. So one of the few things, at least that I can remember, that, Stephen Goff ended up getting wrong regarded, the reporting of a former DC United player. Mark, your thoughts on these two guys, what they potentially would have brought to the Rapids and why they ultimately didn't work out and whether or not that's a good or a bad thing.
I mean, it's pretty simple. You know, they're both veteran presences. They're both flyers. They'd be inexpensive veterans, but they're probably below the quality level that the Rapids are looking for right now. They're just veteran depth, in, you know, a breaking case of emergency kind of players. For Figueroa, it felt like maybe he had an open shot at left back if they were ever interested in him. There's a lot of questions, I think, about left back for the Colorado Rapids going into training. If you asked, I think, Coach Hudson, and he were willing to show his cards a little bit, I think he would tell you that in his head, Declan Wynn is the opening day starter at left back, bar none. I mean, he's the only guy on the roster who has left back experience and who is naturally left footed and played minutes with the senior team last year. If you ask other people who are Rapids fans what they think is going to happen, a lot of folks think that Sam Vines, who played all of last year with Charlotte and is an academy signing, is going to play significant minutes and maybe even that he has a shot at being the starter. It doesn't feel, I watched a fair amount of Charlotte games last year and Sam's good, but he was a good, not exceptional left back in USL. I don't think that translates real well at MLS. And then there's of course confidence. So Sam's 19, you know, I think putting him in as the opening day starter for the Colorado Rapids, having had 0 minutes in Major League Soccer, is really dangerous. I would like to think that he will end up next season with about 800 to 1,000 minutes for the team, but I wouldn't want to put a kid in and throw him in the deep end and see if he can swim. At center back, Kofi Opara I think spent all of last year on the shelf with injury, and I think half of the year before that on the shelf with injury. Back when he was a starting center back in Major League Soccer, he was a good, solid pick. But it's, you don't know what you're getting anymore. The other thing is, I don't think the Rapids are, have problems at center back. The only question that you could throw at with that is, it was revealed today, on the Colorado Rapids website, that they've got a couple players dealing with injury. And one of them is Courtney Ford, who right now is, experiencing some early training injuries, and is probably going to be out a little bit to start the season. The Rapids, said that he has a calf strain and a bone bruise, and is expected to be out 6 to 8 weeks. So whether Ford starts the season with the team is a good question. That means you're looking at a center back pairing, a starting center back pairing for the Rapids, probably of Wilson and Smith, or Smith and Schoberg, and you're short on backup center backs. So that's where you get a guy like Jose Opare. Any thoughts on what the Rapids are going to do if they can't start the season with Court Ford, Matt?
I think it's probably Wilson and Smith, just because I think Anthony Hudson will want whatever the funker was going wrong with Danny Wilson for him to play that out of it. And I don't think there's any doubt, given the two or three games that Tim Howard was not starting in MLS play last season, it was Tommy Smith who was wearing the captain's armband, that, you know, Tommy Smith is first center back on the team sheet when he's absolutely healthy and fit. I might have been in the minority in immediately seeing the minor Figueroa rumor and thinking, no! Given all the youth and talent that you have that's available to you with it, whether it's in the academy, in the draft or anything, Mark, or even just all the young players who are playing and progressing in terms of development in the USL, I've noticed this especially with the last two or three classes of MLS free agents. MLS free agency in its first year of existence, I want to say 2014-2015 offseason. Don't quote me, there was absolutely crazy, just because it was the first time that you had all of these guys that were staples of the league that were immediately available and saw and able to be acquired in ways that they had never had in terms of flexibility. And now it's just kind of been either the retreads of old guys who aren't picked up on contracts, or the same guys who there's really, really interest in, whether it's Alan Gordon. You look at Jeff Lorenowitz, who's basically just signing one-year contract with, you know, contenders that want him as a holding mid center back opportunity. I believe he did just re-sign with Atlanta a couple of weeks ago. But then it's a whole bunch of guys who, I mean, you know, if I had to take them, they're on a 1 year with a team option at the absolute league minimum, and then like no performance incentives whatsoever. And why would you give that opportunity to a guy who you know is going down when you could give that potential opportunity to a homegrown player like Sam Vines or Sam Rabin, if we're talking about positionally Maynard Figueroa as a left back, Kofi Opare as a center back, or take a flyer on somebody else in USL who might have potential that just needs to find in the right opportunity. You know, if it's last ditch, I just need a guy to be a good locker room guy, maybe mentor one of the young guys, that's fine. So, I mean, if you're looking at Maynard Figueroa and thinking, can he put his arm around the shoulder of Sam Vines and guide him through, you know, his first season up with the big club, then I could understand that. If you're getting him at an extreme discount, preferably a veteran minimum, not signing him with any long term or long salary, that makes sense. But if it's anything other than that, like if you're signing him thinking he's going to challenge Declan Wynn, I don't know how that's anything other than the waste of a roster spot and really playing opportunity, just given how we've seen that he deteriorated. I actually like Kofi Opara when he's healthy. He only played in 10 games this entire season, or all of 2018, and he only had 863 minutes, Mark. But the playing time that he got almost perfectly coincided with DC United going on that fantastic run that they had with Wayne Rooney coming in, him and Lucho Acosta, and then the opening of Audi Field. How much of that, you know, how much of that signal was Kofi Opare and, who's their other center back? The Jew who's been in and out with the U.S. national, Steve Birnbaum, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Steve Birnbaum, you know, I thought that they had good chemistry. So, I mean, you know, if I'm a team that's short on center backs that needs a third, fourth option, I can get him at a good price. I'd take a flyer on Kofi Opara. But if I'm just going based on how the Rapids have spent, and this is me thinking in terms of what Porrick Smith and what Anthony Hudson are thinking, not necessarily what I or Mark are thinking. They, as I said previously, Tommy Smith, you know, is center back one, if not center back 1A. Given the amount of money they've spent and what they see in Danny Wilson, regardless of what you dear listeners think about him in terms of being a gifable golden cone that gives up opportunities to Portland Timbers strikers, I think they would probably rate him or want him to play over Kofi Opara, assuming both are healthy and both are available. I think Court Ford, given his potential and the skill set that he has, they value him more than that. And then Kofi Opara isn't a great passer. If you're going to have somebody mainly for not making defensive mistakes, being reliable in the air, and then, you know, just blocking guys on corners and on set pieces, is Axel Schuberg not more valuable than that than Kofi Opara? So if everybody's healthy and everybody's available, I still see Kofi Opara as number five. Is he worth, you know, a budget salary deal at, you know, 150. I think that's about where he was this past year. I would say no. And is there marginal value in terms of what the club is trying to build in giving those minutes to Kofi Opara if, you know, Tommy Smith gets a red card for storming the bench at Minnesota United, or, you know, if Court Ford is hurt and you like that matchup, you like a particular matchup with him more than you would with Axel Schuberg, is that not an opportunity you want to give to Sam Rabin over that? So I just, even if you like Kofi Opara, now, you know, if Axel Schuberg suddenly decides, you know what, I'm retiring tomorrow, okay, fine, sign Kofi Opara. But just given the squad that they have, given how the Rapids value all of the other players that they have at center back, I just don't know that Kofi Opara, unless you absolutely had, you know, it was a must-win game to get in the playoffs, I don't know that he rates over anybody on the squad. And even if it's in that must-win, at most, he's fourth on that depth chart behind the two internationals and Courtney Ford.
I'll just add one thing, which is I think that these preseason injuries really at least highlight the fact that the team isn't ever really as deep at any position as they really think. That a guy like Kofi Opara could be, according to the Rapids website, invited to camp with the team, either to kind of keep his fitness up and show off his stuff for other teams, or to show to the team that maybe he's a potential. If Court Ford's gonna start, you know, all of March maybe on the shelf, that the team probably really needs someone. I would imagine that no matter how healthy or unhealthy the center back core is for the Rapids, Sam Rabin's probably going to start in Colorado Springs. He's just not ready to make the jump unless they really see something in February while they're down in Florida. You know, kind of, I wasn't aware, by the way, that the team had left for Florida until I spoke this week in an interview with Andre Shinyashiki, and found out that they were on East Coast time, just like I was. So, but you know, so they're not experiencing the polar vortex at all.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Mark. Any other things that we want to talk about that, or shall we move on to some new faces in training?
Move new faces in training.
Okay, so the club announced today, folks, that they've got a few people who are there trialing, who are in training, who were not officially signed with the club. Basically, it's a bunch of academy kids. Mark, I'll default to you in terms of where those players stack up and whether or not we could potentially see them in Colorado Springs. It is the three draft picks, other than Shinyashiki, who the Rapids have not officially assigned, who I assume are auditioning for one of those final roster spots. And then it's Kofi Opara et al., essentially just guys rounding out the squad who maybe are looking for a new opportunity. Oh, and then they also have Colorado Springs Switchbacks player. Let me see if I can find him on the list here.
Jordan Schweitzer,
yes, thank you very much, Mark, who I spoke with a couple of people down in Colorado Springs who they speak very highly of as a box-to-boxy midfielder who I'm assuming, you know, assuming the quality is the same, you know, would definitely fit in, at least from style of play, in terms of the total football diamond midfield that the Rapids are possibly going to employ this year. So, Mark, your thoughts on this group as a whole, what it means, or is this, you know, just rounding out the squad to, you know, have guys to participate in the billion squad, you know, indoor or not indoor, closed door scrimmages the Rapids are going to be playing between now and returning to Commerce City?
So the Rapids invited three Academy players and one former Academy player, and I don't imagine that any of them is realistically going to be with the senior team at all this year. Abe Rodriguez is a goalkeeper who I haven't seen play at all. Sebastian Anderson is a midfielder, although he's listed on the roster as a defender here. I think I've seen him play both. And he played, I think, briefly with the U23s, but mostly with the U17s. And I think he has a high profile, but he's not ready yet. And Oliver Larraz, I don't believe, I remember seeing him play much at all. The last guy on the list is, a guy whose name is really difficult to pronounce, Enoch Mushagalusa. And Mushagalusa was, he graduated this last, spring from South High School in, the Wash Park neighborhood. He was on the Rapids Academy team for a while. He's a striker. In his like junior year when he was a U17, he banged in an absolute ton of goals for the U16 or U17 team. And then he became less of a factor last year when he reached an older level and they were spreading the goals around. But he's a really talented, kind of, nose for goal kind of guy. Fast and pacey, but a good kind of like poacher finisher. I don't know why he's listed on the roster as invited to train, which means he's no longer with the academy, which also means that he did not go to college. And so I think he's looking for a professional contract somewhere.
Would the Rapids hold his homegrown rights then?
They would. But what that would mean is that he could play for any team in USL and the Rapids, I think, hold his rights for like 2 years. So, I think the most likely thing there is that the Colorado Springs coaches will go to Florida with the Rapids coaches and keep an eye on him and consider whether he belongs with them or not. And the other thing that they'll do is maybe make tape or call up a couple coaches who may be around and say in USL and say, hey, we got this guy. Do you have any use for him? So, you know, he's an interesting case. The three Rapids super draft picks, Marcelo Borges, who's a right back, Jacob Hauser-Ramsey, who's a center back, and Robbie Mertz, who's, I think, a defensive midfielder or a two-way midfielder, are all fringy. I think the team has pretty much filled out their roster. You know, I think Borges is the best shot to stick just because they're thin at right back, and he can probably play a couple different positions there. Also, a guy with speed at right back can slot in at defensive mid. He can kind of move up and be a wide player. So, you know, that's there. And then we've already talked about Opare and what he's doing there. It's a good guess exactly what he is doing there. He might also be, trying out really for USL, just to say, like, to get his fitness up and to say, I want to keep playing professional soccer. This is my best opportunity. You know, the nice thing is that I think there's a lot of teams training down in Florida. And so it just takes a few phone calls, to find a guy another spot. The other thing is he was invited. I don't know if Opare actually showed up, and, the Rapids have not been real big on, the last year, providing footage from training. When we get to February, we'll know more, when they have their first preseason games, the first of which will probably be closed door, and then they'll probably open them up for us. But, you know, the last year at this time, the Rapids played a pair of games over 2 days against the Ventura County Fusion when they were out in Los Angeles, and they basically told us nothing about those games. I don't recall whether they even said who scored the goals for the Rapids.
Did we even get a score line for that game? Like most of the time, like you don't get a score line, you don't get a lineup, you don't get anything.
I remember them mentioning that goals were scored. I don't remember them mentioning who scored them. So, you know, I think it's an interesting thing to try and, 'cause the fans want anything they're dying for soccer to come back. So, for the team to kind of say, like, we don't really want to reveal anything is a little irritating, but, you know, I can understand it to some degree. They're trying to keep secrets. Last year, remember also, it was a CCL year. And so they were trying to keep other teams from being able to scout them, going into CCL. This year, that's not a factor. So, we might see a little bit more, and might learn a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Just one question for you, Mark, before we move on. Of the three academy players who've been involved in training, can you handicap who's maybe the most pro ready or most likely to be, given the opportunity to train and play, down in the Springs this year?
You mean the three who were mentioned in the preseason camp, or
yes.
The three? Oh,
yes.
Okay.
So of Rodriguez, Anderson, and then Larraz. Who do you think has the best shot of getting involved in with Trishut and Company?
Honestly, I'd say all of them have almost zero shot. The only one I have any I've laid eyes on and can speak intelligently about is Anderson. But it doesn't make sense to send them to Colorado Springs. The level of talent that they're going to face in the academy, in DA matches this winter and spring is really, really high. And so they probably makes more sense for them to stay with the academy team.
Excellent stuff, Mark. We have an Ask HDHL via email from our good friend David Malenfant. David, hello. And David asked us a couple of questions, one of which, Mark, was looking back at the Acosta trade and comparing it to Baji, say, with the squad now. So 6 months after the trade, we've gotten an opportunity to see what both players are like with their new clubs, and we've also seen the potential role that they'll be playing going forward with their new clubs. Acosta presumably is one of the starting number eights in the diamond, and Baji is, you know, a little bit the old man given the full youth movement that's being undergone in Frisco, Texas. So given that, 6 months after the trade, it really does look like the Acosta deal was a trigger to many positive moves for the Rapids. Could you imagine the squad dynamic with Baji up top and no Acosta? Parentheses, speculative question to create conversation. Close parentheses with a winky face. So, Mark, let's propose, say, that everything in the Rapids, as far as their roster decisions, has occurred as it has, but let's remove Kellen Acosta and let's add Dominic Baji. What do the Rapids look like? How is the midfield sans Kellen Acosta, and how would Dominic Baji fit in with the new striker core?
Huh. That's a fascinating question. I mean, it means that they don't get either Diego Rubio or Kai Kamara, because you can't put all three of them on the field at the same time. They don't make a lot of sense. Kai Kamara and Baji basically play the same position. You can play Baji wide left, and then you would put the Rapids in a 4-3-3, which just seems crazy to me that they would never do it. It's just can you name a single team in MLS this year who had a 4-3-3?
Wasn't that the main formation for Sporting Kansas City, and then New York City FC pre Dominic Torrent sometimes?
Yeah. That's well said. I think you're right. But it's pretty
very
rare.
Very different assets and very different talent than, like, I struggle off the top of my head right now to think of a formation that the Rapids would be less prepared to play, just given the complete devoid of true wide players as opposed to wide midfielders they'd have in the front left wing and right wing spot.
Yeah, so that's the other thing, is that the move to get Kellen Acosta and get rid of Dominic Baji is a move that is predicated on the switch of formations, right? Kellen Acosta doesn't make sense with the Colorado Rapids if they're still in a 5-3-2. I mean, it sort of makes sense, but not really, because we suddenly have too many center mids. It's Kellen Acosta makes so much sense in the diamond that it's like peanut butter and chocolate. You know, it's just makes absolute, he's just a perfect shuttler. And if you don't have him, and you still have Dominic Badji, then you have fewer options to kind of toy with, in terms of formation. So, can I see a world where that would be the case? Not exactly, not with all these. They wouldn't have made all these changes. They'd still be short a midfielder for sure. Although, you know, theoretically you could put, you know, if you're not going to go 4-3-3, so let's say you go 4-4-2 with a flat midfield and you play Mesquita as kind of your slightly up guy and you play, I guess, Jack Price as your slightly back guy. And you kind of expect them to be two-way midfielders. You put Serna on the left. You put, I don't know, Diego Rubio on the right. You know, it's a funky, it's a difficult question to kind of come up with. But, you know, so the answer is it's hard to see. But it's doable. It's doable.
No, I definitely think if they hadn't made the Kellen Acosta move, they still would have had to have done something in the midfield. You know, assuming that we're going with the 4-4-2 diamond mark, I don't know how I feel about, you know, Benny Failhaber's in there somewhere. We've already talked about that. Jack Price is your number six. You know, I assume just given that move, and even if you add Dominic Badji and remove any one of the strikers, I don't know that the Rapids are going and getting another striker for the level of salary or acquisition cost of a Diego Rubio or a Kai Kamara. So I'm still okay with the striker core as it is. I think Dominic Badji could work with just about anybody in that role, with the exception of maybe Nicky Jackson, just because I think they're too similar that it would have had to have been kind of when Badji and Yannick Bolli were on the field together, when it was kind of a one-off, one-on in terms of who was going to be the channel runner and who was going to be more reserved. Whereas I feel like Badji is the true number nine, and then pretty much any of the other guys that we've seen as forward, in with the exception of Jackson, as the underneath guy could absolutely work. You know, Shin Yashiki likes to check to the ball a little bit more. I would like Sam Nicholson or Diego Rubio in that role. I could see Badji and Kai Kamara working together, if for no other reason that Kai Kamara is just gonna be the true, you know, back to goal guy, and then Badji's either running on one side of him or on the other side of him, or just shooting the gap that Kai Kamara doesn't operate. I still think that could work. I think that would have been more effective than anything we saw from Badji and Yannick Bolli, or certainly Badji and Jack McBean together. But I think the striker core is good. But I don't know how I feel about the four-man midfield if you just remove Acosta, because then it's probably Mesquita probably drops to the midfield as opposed to being a midfield slash forward. Benny Failhaber is in there somewhere. Jack Price is in there somewhere else. But as opposed to going into the season, I would not be shocked at all. I would almost expect Kellen Acosta to be the best midfielder in that four-man diamond, and immediately whoever's replacing Kellen Acosta, no matter who it is, whether it's moving Benny Failhaber to the number eight and putting Dylan Serna up top at the top of the diamond, whether it's, you know, Johan Blomberg, Nana Boateng, whomever in that role, even a Cole Bassett, like, that person will be de facto the weakest link in that four-man diamond, and I don't feel as good about that as I would about Badji with any of the other striker cores than we have. I still think the team would be roughly about the same, but in the context of all the other moves they've made and the positions where they now have new strength, David, I still think that it's a net win both in a vacuum and in the context of the team for the Rapids acquiring Costa for Dominic Badji.
One other piece of news, since you mentioned Cole Bassett's name, the men's national team, or the U.S. Federation, announced the players who were invited to training camp with the U.S. UA teens, and not one but two Colorado Rapids were named to that team. One was Cole Bassett, which is great. He's also, if I'm not mistaken, the only player on the U18 roster who had senior team minutes for an MLS squad last year. The other name that was a bit of a surprise to me, because I've seen him play and I thought he was great, but I didn't know that he was thought of very highly in the U.S., is midfielder Armando Munoz-Zarate. And Munoz-Zarate is I don't remember him very well. I watched him play once or twice. And I think he plays mostly on the wing. But I think he spent some time with the U-23s in the middle too. So it'll be interesting to see, what comes out of that and how that goes down. But it's exciting. I think he's a guy who you should, Rapids fans can now put on their rosters. The last time a player was surprisingly named to, winter camp with the U.S. youth roster was Matt Hundley. And shortly thereafter, he wound up at UCLA, and shortly thereafter, he got signed to a 4-year contract for the senior team with the Colorado Rapids. So, if you have a spreadsheet, put Armando Munoz Zarate's name on it. He just went to the top of the pack a little bit.
Excellent stuff, Mark. That does it for us, folks, as far as all the big things that we have to talk about, but we will be running, as Mark teased a little bit earlier in the show, his sit-down over the phone with Andre Shinyashiki. Mark, why don't you give us a little preview of the conversation you had with the Rapids' newest striker?
I asked him about his roommate, his favorite teams to play with on FIFA, his experience in the system at DU. I asked him about what it was like, to be, you know, picked on draft day, what it was like to have the hometown team pay extra money to trade up for him. He was a lovely dude, and I'm really excited, to talk to him. And I kind of reminded him that, that we'd met once before at the U23 training, and he immediately said, "I have no idea who you are." So, So he's a fun guy. I'm excited for him. And the last question I asked him, which you'll have to hang on for, is the over-under on how many times his name will be mispronounced by MLS broadcasters this year.
Ooh, that one. Ooh.
Matt, what do you think? How many times are they going to mispronounce his name? Over, what would be your kind of, what would you set the over-under at for, like, it's going to be somewhere around?
Well, I know for a fact that Richard Fleming and everybody associated with the Rapids radio and TV broadcast, like, they're going to be hammered home on getting that one correct, especially after everything that went on to finally decide on how they're pronouncing Axel's last name a couple of years ago. So I would bet it's close to zero, or at the very least, you know, it would be with a sneeze coming. Yeah, on our side. But are we – so is this every single – every single opponent the Rapids are playing, all of their MLS live streams, plus all of the national team streams,
plus
during games,
plus all of the times he comes on in the 47th minute and the PA announcer says, "Coming on for the Colorado Rapids, number 99, Andre Shinyashika."
Oh, man, I would...
Barnes.
I'm gonna say it happens at least half of the games.
Wow.
He's involved. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if it's at least gonna be a dozen. I'd probably put the over under at like 15 and a half.
Wow, that's high. I was gonna say 10 was a good thing because it's based on how many times he's getting on the field. But yeah, I think 15 is a good number.
Yeah, I think it'll depend on who he's playing in. I'm not going to name names, but there are several Eastern Conference TV broadcast streams that I've watched for Eastern Conference teams on MLS Plus, or not MLS Plus anymore, on ESPN Plus, excuse me, that just do not do a whole lot of research in how to pronounce their other names. Like, there was a point in which, I won't say who, but somebody was getting Johan Blomberg's name very incorrect. So I think if it does happen, it'll come in bunches to where, you know, it'll be Shinyashiki starting or coming on as a sub, and the opposing broadcast team will really want to talk about him, and it'll be like 4 or 5 times that they get it incorrectly. Like, it won't be a one time, and then, you know, the producer, whomever gets in the ear of the play-by-play guys and says, "Actually, it's pronounced like that." So I think it'll come in bunches to where maybe the number of games it happens in will probably be, you'll probably be able to count that on one hand, but the number of times I think it'll happen will easily be double digits for me.
Nice. All right, roll the tape, dude. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter @soccer_rabbi, @LWSMattPollard, follow the podcast @Rapids96Podcast, email us @Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com, subscribe to us from wherever you get your podcatcher, we're at your favorite podcatcher. I do officially have a tweet thread up of all of the places that we are on and where there is a an internet link to it rather than an app. I have the link included on that. So and if we're not somewhere that you'd prefer us to be, hit us up on any of those platforms and we'll do our best to get us on there. All right, Mark, let's roll your conversation with Andre Shinichiki. We'll see you next week, folks.
Peace. I am ready to go. How's it going, Andre?
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing pretty well.
Good. Hey, we met once. I came out to U23 training, and you guys were kind of off to the side. I don't know if you probably don't remember it, but...
Yeah, my memory isn't that good, so I don't remember.
You met a lot of maybe guys.
If I see your face, I'll remember it.
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. Doesn't matter. I remember, I've been telling people this story. I remember I went up to you and I said, hey, what are you going to do after college? And you just looked at me like I just shot your dog and said, I'm going to play in Major League Soccer. And
I knew it all along.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, this was before your college season. So, I was just wondering, did you know you were going to be ridiculously good this last senior season?
I mean, you have a lot of confidence in the work you do, so yeah, I know I was going to be good. I mean, obviously you need a little bit of everything, including luck, and I had all of that, so it worked out.
It's good that you chalk some of it up to luck, but a lot of it clearly comes from a lot of skill. So congratulations on a great senior season and getting drafted. So, first of all, how's Florida?
Oh, Florida's great, you know, just... getting to know the guys, kind of knowing everybody and training with the entire squad is really cool, and I'm really, really, really happy with the way things have gone here.
Are you training with the forwards, or is it the forwards and the midfielders together, or has the whole squad been together for basically every drill?
I think it's more like the whole team together type of thing. We're not really doing we haven't done much of just forwards work or just midfielders work. We are just basically doing everything, the entire team.
Do you have a roommate for starters?
Yeah, I have a roommate, but I can't say who it is.
I can't say who it is. All right. Is your roommate, neat or a total mess? And are they as good at FIFA as you are?
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
Is your roommate neat or is he messy? And is your roommate any good at FIFA or are you better than him?
I don't know because I haven't played FIFA and I haven't seen him play.
All right. Excellent. All right, so when you get to the super draft, people are talking about you, I'm sure your agent's talking about where you're going to go and so on. And then a team actually paid extra money to trade up to get you. And not only was it a team, but it happened to be the local team in the same town that you play for college. What did that feel like for you? What was it like to have a team, go out of its way to not only draft you, but trade up to get you?
I mean, it feels great, because I feel like sometimes in the draft, teams just go for best player available, or they just kind of go through the motions. And I think that the Rapids trading up and, spending that kind of money and really showing that they had a lot of interest for me was something that meant a lot for me.
What did, when you first talked to them, either over the phone right before they drafted you or in the first couple weeks after you were drafted and you joined the club, what did Porrick Smith and Anthony Hudson say to you about why it was that they moved up in the draft and why they were so excited to get you?
I mean, they told me pre-draft, they were like, we really want you, we are trying everything we can do to get you, but they didn't mention any specifics about it. And then after the draft, when they got me, they were just like, we knew you were our guy in the draft, and we were only going to be happy if we came out of here with you. And so that's what they were like, we have to go up because otherwise we won't get him.
For Rapids fans who maybe don't watch a lot of college soccer or aren't really familiar with their game, I mean, everybody pretty much knows that you scored a ton of goals last year, but there are lots of different strikers and lots of different styles. How would you describe the way you approach playing as a center forward or as a striker? What's your game?
I mean, I think I like to think of myself as a pretty complete player. I make runs in behind. I can check off and play with combination. And honestly, like, what I would define myself as is just an extremely hard worker. And I think that when you work hard and play every play, the goals come to you more naturally.
At DU, you know, you played for Jamie Franks. What was the system, if you could describe it, that he played? And what would you say your role was exactly in that system?
Well, I think it's complicated to explain the system we play. I would have to give you like an hour answer for this. So that's kind of hard because there's no specific formation that we play. But my role was basically to score goals, set up teammates, and mostly like organize the team when we were pressing. Those were my like main roles.
Was your press a zone press or a man press, and was it typically about winning the ball back in the opponent's third, or was it a halfway press, or did it kind of vary from situation to situation and game to game?
It was more game to game, but it was usually forcing the other team to go long, and then like we had a lot of confidence that our center backs would win the ball back for us, or that we would force a mistake, like a ball out of bounds or something like that.
Do you feel like with the Rapids there's a ton to learn and it's a different system, or are you so far fairly comfortable that, oh yeah, this is something that I get and I understand? Is it new and you're excited to learn about it, or is it kind of old and you're like feeling comfortable?
I feel comfortable. There's new ideas, and it's although it's a different formation, I would say it's the gaffer and the rest of his staff has been helping me a lot understand how to be effective and playing forward for them, and so I'm just trying to learn as much as possible, and I feel like I am getting a good grasp of what I need to do to be on the field.
What's your goal for this year? What do you hope at the end of the year to say I did this?
I just hope that I can help the Colorado Rapids be a successful team, you know. And there's obviously many ways to do that, but whichever way that the coaching staff finds best for me to help, then I'll be happy as well.
So you've got another forward on the team who's new to the ball club, but he kind of comes at it from a different direction in the sense that he's a big target forward, bangs goals in with his head. He's a little bit older. He's a well-established MLS personality. I'm talking about Kai Kamara. What was it like meeting him, and what have your interactions with him been like, and what kind of secret deals have you guys, kind of secrets from Major League Soccer, has Kai Kamara shared with you?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really gotten to meet him too much yet, but it's, I mean, I think there's a bunch of other guys that I've met here who are helping the culture and establishing a really, really good environment for me. So I'm just happy with all my teammates, honestly. I can't complain about anything.
Excellent. Two more questions. One, who is your favorite player when you were a kid? And who is your favorite player now? And then there's one more after that.
Okay, my favorite player when I was a kid was the Brazilian Ronaldo, which some people call the fat Ronaldo. That he was my favorite player. And my favorite player to watch right now that I model my game after is Firmino from Liverpool.
Yeah, I think that'll excite a lot of Rapid supporters. So I think we could use a little bit more Firmino on the team this year. Final question. I noticed in the Super Draft and in some of the podcasts that I listen to around MLS that people are struggling with your last name. So over under between now and October 2019, how many times do you think MLS broadcasters and PA announcers are going to mispronounce your last name? And after that, you can say for us exactly how you want your last name pronounced. How many times are they going to mispronounce your name this year?
Well, probably a lot, honestly. I mean, especially if some, like most of them don't watch college soccer, that's going to probably make their job harder because they have never heard anybody say my name. But I don't know if they watch. They watch it. There's a bunch of people that I told how to say my last name, and the proper way to say it is Shinya Shiki.
Excellent. Hey, Andre, thank you very much for talking to us at Holding the Highline podcast today.
All right, no problem. Thank you very much.